Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
It's time for a new edition of Colt Chinero Chat, the highly anticipated end of season show is what we're going to knock out today. I'm Jeremy. I'm joined per usual by Robbie. What's going on, man? How are you?
Hey, Jeremy. Highly anticipated by whom?
We have legions of fans, Robbie. Scores of listeners.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, that's right. Sorry. excited to actually talk about some... Well, it's exciting to talk about some transfer stuff and squad building and that, but it's also we're a little bit in the dark here as to what Atletico plan to do and how they're going to play and so we'll get into a bunch of that today.
Yeah, we're going to crack the knuckles and really get into some of this stuff here, the nitty gritty. You wrote a very interesting column that went up on our site yesterday, Robbie, about potential midfield options for Atleti currently playing in Ligue 1, and I do want to talk about how Atletico can best reinforce the midfield, but now that the season is over, I guess we can offer a brief summation of what we have been watching for the past 9 months. Do you feel any relief that the season is over and that there will be no more league action for another 2.5 months?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it was... Yeah, once Atletico got ruled out of winning La Liga or ruled themselves out or fell out of the title race or mm-hmm. whatever you want to say, it was just about finishing fourth then. And I find it hard to kind of cheer that kind of stuff on, not because it's not a nice boost and a nice thing to keep an eye on, but at the same time it was so frustrating watching Atletico losing to so many teams at the bottom of the table and kind of shooting themselves in the foot. And just having to suffice with a Champions League spot, and that's great and all, but yeah, it's time to reset, refresh, and see where Atletico are going from here.
In some aspects, I think only one way but up, right? Because such was the nature of several of these performances this season. I mean, generally speaking, Robbie, third place is about where Atleti should be most seasons, given the budget constraints, given Atleti's financial power relative to clubs like Real Madrid, for example, although you can't really accurately compare the two, given where they are in the financial stratosphere. But overall... The bare minimum is third place, and Atleti couldn't really do much beyond that for a variety of reasons that we've spent the entire season talking about. And now kind of what we want to focus on and shift toward is how Atleti can improve, how Atleti can stay comfortably ahead of the chasing pack, Simeone name-checked Sevilla, Betis, Athletic during the season as teams that are catching, La Real as well, as teams that are catching up to Atleti. How Atleti can stay ahead of that pack and perhaps even muster some kind of a title challenge, even though we know Real Madrid are the reigning league and Champions League winners and stand to improve even more this summer.
Yeah, and I take the point about Atletico's budget and that, but at the same time, that kind of Atletico lost to teams that they should be beating this season, and I get that that's a squad issue and a depth issue, and when there's injuries and all, and they do get that, but I just think that and I do get that winning La Liga is a kind of a under Simeone, once every maybe 5 or 6 years, and he has improved and Atletico and put them into the conversation. But at the same time, I would have liked to see a little bit of a more concerted plan and to have stayed in the title race for a little bit longer.
Mm-hmm.
Now, again, I understand that a lot of that comes down to squad depth and injuries and having the players available to you that the likes of Real Madrid not having the players that Real Madrid have. But, I just would have liked to see... I think my issues with last season... were the fact that Atletico didn't really have, I don't know what they were trying to do for most of the season.
Mm-hmm.
What are they exactly? Are they like a team that sits deep and counters? Are they a more progressive team? The fact that they don't develop young talent is an issue that bothers me.
Yep.
I just would like to see a more coherent strategy rather than a kind of a situational approach whereby Atletico need to win 4 games or 5 games. Just batten down the hatches and hope for the best. You know, it's kind of... It's not all that... For me, that's not that... interesting, and I know that it's all about winning and all that kind of stuff, but I would like to just see a more coherent strategy and a tactical system that Simeone actually believes in, rather than this kind of going with 3 at the back and then going back to 4 at the back and then just a load of different tactical systems. So yeah, that's kind of partly what I would like to see them fix this summer,
figuring out what kind of team they want to be, and that seeps from the administrative, from boardroom level down to the playing field, down to how Simeone is going to transmit this to the players. There's a lot at stake this summer. And as we saw a couple of weeks ago, Andrea Berta, the club's sporting director, said not to expect big signings, not to expect anything major in the way of a serious financial outlay, that they want to maintain most of this squad, the spine of this squad. There are probably going to be a few departures here and there. I mean, there are a bunch of rumors floating around. This is a tough time of year because it's before any international tournament. The season's just ended, and you know, people want blood, right? They smell blood in the water, and it's really open season right now in terms of rumors. The first guy I want to ask you about, Robbie, is Angel Correa, because in the past 10 days or so, there's been quite a bit of talk in the Madrid press about Correa possibly being unhappy with his role and maybe seeking an exit this summer. What would you make of the team's top scorer this year possibly moving on?
Yeah, I think it would probably make sense for him at this stage in his career. I think we tend to be really optimistic about players during the summer, and we think we like to, as humans just in general, like to think the most optimistic outcome and think, oh no, this is going to be Correa's year. But it hasn't happened for him so far. He's turns 28 next season, and he's just a player that's not quite there. He probably deserves to be a starter somewhere and a focal point somewhere, rather than being starting some games and then dropping and out of the team and then kind of being forgotten. And you know, and I know that that's kind of situational in terms of Atletico being down a goal and needing something to change it up, and that's an issue again with the tactics. But I just don't see how he can ever turn into the guy that he probably wants to be and deserves to be. So like, he's probably the kind of player who can score 15 goals for Sevilla, for example, just a tier slightly below Atletico. Unless he's happy with the role, with the role of being kind of a super sub, backup striker, guy who injects a bit of something into the team. So yeah, I don't really know what his motivations are. He's been at the club since 2015, and he has a contract until 2026. So I don't, not entirely sure that Simeone would be all that keen to sell him if the money isn't going to be put directly back into replacement. But having said that, Atletico's attacking options are really quite good. When you look at how well Cunha played, it looks like he's going to become a key player next season. João Felix, obviously, and I don't know. It depends on what's motivating him, what kind of an offer comes in, and whether or not Simeone is willing to part with him in the knowledge, safe in the knowledge that he's going to be replaced, rather than selling him for 40 million and then not bringing anybody in.
Mm-hmm. The club does seem to want a forward at any rate, someone to at least replace the outgoing Luis Suarez. Well, Correa, it's a really kind of weird story because he just renewed that contract, Robbie, in January to 2026. So if he does want to try to force an exit, and I'm not saying this is what he's thinking or what he's going to do, he doesn't really have a whole lot of leverage. He did just extend the contract, which kind of makes me think, in addition to Correa's attitude, he's always been pretty humble and selfless, and he's always accepted this kind of role. It kind of makes me think that this is something not necessarily planted by the club, but it's something that would align with the club's financial interests in generating money for further transfers, because as we've established throughout this season, Atletico have several needs, and we're going to talk a little bit more about them on this edition of the show.
Exactly, yeah, and an offer came in a couple of years ago for him that was over what you would expect to get from him, and like 55 million or something like that. And I think that it depends on what you're looking for. I mean, if you're going to, he's more of like a number a second striker, right, but behind the striker. Depends on exactly what, and this comes down again to squad building and what exactly Atletico are trying to be next year.
Mm-hmm.
Do you buy a variety of players and try to and mix and match them depending on the situation, or do you go all in on a specific style and build a squad for that? And that's probably why they really like Griezmann, because he can do it all, and he can play in somebody, like, as good as Correa is, he is quite limited in terms of what he's good at. He's really good at, but he's not going to he's not going to link play as well maybe as a Griezmann or a João Felix. So if back to what you said, this might be a nice way to maybe a guy with a contract, a 27-year-old coming off his best season with a contract till 2026, if a club wants to buy him, they're probably going to have to offer 40 or 50 million. And I think, and I wonder if Atletico got offered that, would they say no? And I would say he is the exact type of player who is dispensable in this team. In that, like I said, he's good at specific things, but he's not, he doesn't seem to fit in with what direction Atletico are heading in.
My issue is that he's just so inconsistent, Robbie. Like, he started this season in such fine form with 4-goal contributions in the first 3 games. Griezmann comes back, his minutes get cut, which isn't really fair to him. He goes on a 3-month goalless drought. He comes back to start 2022, scores 7 goals in 9 games, including that halfway line lob against Villarreal in January. And then he goes cold again. Final 400 minutes he played this season, he scored just 1 goal, and that was on the final day. So I kind of think, part of me thinks that maybe this is as good as it gets for Correa, who is a very talented player, has been a very important player for the past 3 seasons as he's pretty greatly improved from what he was before 2019, 2020. But I don't know just how high the ceiling is. Maybe this is as good as it gets for him.
Yeah, exactly. And, yeah, like you said there, I mean, that's the inconsistency issue. But then I would also ask the question, who at Atletico was consistent last season, and where is this problem coming from?
Yes.
Is it a mentality issue? Is it an issue with the tactics changing so often? Is it a motivational issue? And this is what we tried to get to during the season. We just obviously couldn't, but because we don't know. But I just wonder if this malaise continues into the next season, and if it does, what happens? Because it's been kind of going on now for a while, and I've said it in the past that then there's a Champions League game where everyone gets really excited, and then all of a sudden it's kind of just back to losing to Mallorca and not knowing why. You know, we have to just kind of keep it together here and keep going, and you're sitting there going like, but this keeps happening, like, what's going on? You know, and I don't know what the answer to it is. So the consistency issue, yes, and this has been a trait in Correa's game for longer than it's been happening to Atletico Madrid players in general. But I just wonder, playing for Simeone for so long, a lot of players tend to get burnt out. The only one that seems to not have is Koke, and he's just he keeps going. But like, you look at the likes of Saul as well, who just, he just need a change, you know. And I wonder if that's the same with Correa, and I wonder if Atletico think that, and I wonder if Correa himself, despite the fact that he renewed, I wonder is he thinking the same? Maybe if he gets if the right offer comes in, and maybe they're all, maybe all three part or the club, Correa and whatever buying club might come in, maybe Correa and Atletico are in agreement on that, and like, look, I want to stay, but if the right offer comes in, we'll think about it, and they're open to whatever happens.
Yeah, that's the sensation I'm getting from reading the reports in Marca and Diario As and elsewhere, that neither party really wants this to happen. I think Atleti at boardroom level might want it to happen more than Correa, but I don't think it's likely that he leaves. But it's worth mentioning because it's being talked about. It's on social media. It's in the papers. If Correa goes, and even if he doesn't, it seems like Atleti are determined, or at least letting it filter out that they're determined, to bring back Alvaro Morata, Robbie, at least for preseason. And if they don't get the right offer, his contract's up in 2023. You just hang on to him for next season. What would you make of an Alvaro Morata comeback, a revenge tour?
I wouldn't mind that at all. Actually, in terms of what I've seen him bringing to the table for Spain under Luis Enrique, and the high pressing, and his, I mean, when you look at his statistics on Football Reference, his pressing is out of this world. And I just wonder if he is the exact kind of player, and then you rely then on João Felix and Rodrigo De Paul to chip in and kind of guide you to glory. Then I know Morata is a little bit of a kind of a sneered at figure in Spanish football, and just in general, given the fact that he's moved around and he keeps on, he never seems to be able to find his forever home. But at the same time, he you know the way, like, players generally, they go to Real Madrid, not good enough there. They go to someone in the Premier League, like Spurs, not good enough there. Then they start, and they just kind of keep on dropping down, and they, like the Peter principle, so they get to their level, and that's exactly where they stay. Morata is going, has been moving around to the biggest clubs in the world now for a good few years. He's been at Madrid, Chelsea, Juventus, Atletico, Barcelona are linked, and I just wonder, the guy is doing something right, and I just wonder if he might have a place in in Simeone's plans, if they do plan on kind of playing in a more intense, aggressive style.
I think it could work out in the sense that it wouldn't really impede Mateus Cunha's progress. And that is, for me, one of the top stories to watch next year, is just how good is Cunha going to be? Is he a guy who can get Atletico 20 to 25 goals in all competitions? If he is, that means they can challenge for trophies. Feasibly, theoretically at least, they can challenge for trophies if they have a striker who is that kind of reference point. Morata is a better support striker than a guy who can lead the line. I think he's probably... His agent is a better representative for his skills than the player himself, because he just gets linked to all these big clubs and moves to all these big clubs without ever really, in a sense, making a name for himself at any of these clubs. And that's not to say he's a bad player. He's been a key player under Luis Enrique for Spain. That's the one coach who seems to believe in him more than anybody else. And some of his underlying metrics on Football Reference, which I'm looking at right now, in terms of his pressures, in terms of some of the defensive work required from his Simeone forward, it wouldn't be a bad fit, mostly because I don't think it would really get in the way of Cunha's development and João Felix's development, in the sense that signing a Raúl de Tomás, in the sense that signing a Lautaro Martinez or a Darwin Núñez would.
Yeah, I'm not entirely sure if... The Darwin Núñez question, I saw him when he played for Almeria, wasn't it? He went to Almeria.
Yep.
Yeah, he was at Almeria for a year or two, about 2 or 3 years ago, before he moved on to play with Benfica. And he, I don't know. I think the question with him is his link-up play and that, and he's a good, like, pure nine. But, we're talking here about something that, what exactly, like, I don't know if there's a team in La Liga with as many questions about what direction they're trying to go in than Atletico Madrid. Because the 4-4-2 low block isn't sustainable, we know that. But what do they do, and how do they build that? So everything is contingent on exactly what Simeone wants, how he wants to do, and how committed he is to that. Because if he is planning, say for example, to move after next season, or he's going to manage another club, and at some point, and I just wonder. He needs to evolve, and I just wonder, does he need to maybe just stick with a more attacking style for a full season in order to work out those wrinkles? Because you never actually get a chance to fully understand where it is that's going wrong and that. And I understand that Atletico are just win at all costs and that's it, but I just wonder, does Simeone at some point have to go all in on a specific way of playing?
I mean, it's been 11 years. The answer to that is probably no. And some of the stats bear out what you're saying, that Atletico are kind of, from a schematic, strategic, tactical point of view, that they're kind of average in attack. I'm looking at stats from some data visualization from The Analyst right now, theanalyst.com. And Atletico's passes per sequence from last season, around 3.5 passes per attacking sequence. That was sixth in La Liga. Sequence time is about average, well below Madrid and Barcelona, which means they have the ball more. Madrid and Barcelona have the longest sequence time, which means they have more possession. In terms of attacking speed, direct speed, Atletico are about average. Teams like Alaves, Mallorca, Athletic were toward the top of that table. Atletico, I think, were ninth. So... yeah, Atletico have done a better job in recent years of holding the ball, of generating more neat passing sequences, holding the ball a bit longer and a little bit more effectively. But yeah, given the names in this attack and given how long Simeone's been here, it's been a very slow, gradual change. And in several ways, Atletico are still pretty average in terms of attacking, in terms of the offensive style.
Yeah, and I'd love to see the variance in that, because it's all either one or the other, and I think that the passes for sequence and things like that are great, and obviously I love stats, but I think you need to add context to that, in that a lot of Atletico sequences and their build-up is just too slow, and I wonder how they change that, and I know how to change it, or I know the basic idea about changing it. You have to take more risk. And the problem with Atletico last season was, as soon as they took risk, they got opened up, and the defense didn't know what they were doing, and Felipe lunged in, and that happened time and time again, and Oblak was completely exposed. So in order to progress the ball better, you have to assume more risk, and but then also be able to defend in transition, so that you're not just completely sliced open, and that's exactly what they have to do. But how do they do that? There's 100 different ways they can do that. Who do they buy in order to improve them, both at the back, so to make sure that they don't get opened up, but also someone that has the mentality and that fits the style that will open up the opposition defences by assuming more risk. But at the same time, I think, to be fair to Simeone, if Trippier doesn't go, if Marco Llorente is fit, that was the outlet, that was what their plan was, mm-hmm. and that would have go down that right hand side with Trippier's creativity from there and his crossing, and that was the plan. But Trippier left, Llorente then had to, so you're ruining two positions, and I think that Atletico need to scout smartly, buy wisely, and create competition with players that Simeone trusts and has no problem playing if something happens to them. So Trippier gets injured, who's without ruining the entire makeup of your team, who do you have to go there, like a ready-made fullback, and obviously he's probably not going to be as good as your first choice, but someone who Simeone trusts instead of having to kind of rob Peter to pay Paul, things like that. So I just wonder, this all fits into a big a broader picture as to how Atletico are going to attack this summer, and yeah, there's a lot of pressure on them to get it right.
Mm-hmm. One thing Atleti under Simeone do continue to excel at, Robbie, is keeping shots and opportunities down from open play. Atleti conceded the fewest open play shots of anyone in La Liga this season, with 230 from 38 games, and yet they still let in 43 goals. So is one of the solutions you were talking about, is one of them as simple as Jan Oblak just needs to be better? And if Jan Oblak is better, Atleti are right back toward the top of La Liga and competing in the latter stages of cup competitions. Is it really that easy?
Well, apparently yes, but that also means that he has to believe in the players in front of him. He has to... Atletico can't be opened up as much, and I understand what you're saying, and I wrote an article in the middle of last year about how their shots were down, and they do tend to keep the shots at a minimum, but the problem is that the shots that they do give up are pretty wide open, and that's high quality, the issue. And then you have a mentality issue that comes into it. Then when they do go down, what happens? Are they capable? Like, for example, if you saw Liverpool this season at all, like they went 1-0. Now it's not ideal, obviously you don't want to go 1-0 down, but Liverpool went 1-0 down on a number of occasions this season, and they were just like, we're going to score 3 goals there, and it was like they knew, and the opposition knew, they were just, this is going to be they're going to bombard us here until they get that goal. Whereas with Atletico, it's, we saw this so many times that season, where they go a goal down, or they're tied, they're locked in a nil-all battle, and they're so afraid of going for it that the opposition are looking, going, they don't really believe here. Mm-hmm. And as the game ticks on, Atletico get more desperate, they get a little bit more nervous, and all of a sudden they get hit on the break, and that's it, game over. So, yeah, it's just it all ties into it. I mean, All Black obviously has to be better, but a better back four, a more consistent back four. Atletico need to be better in transition defensively, and yeah, they need to not put him in situations where he's being exposed like he is, and that would definitely go a long way to help to solving a lot of the problems.
Mm-hmm. If Atleti can make a big sale or two, at least that is what the claim is, that's what the club is insisting. One or two big sales means they can more easily reinforce the defense and the midfield. How do Atleti make the most of a potential Renan Lodi sale, Robbie? It seems like this is something that is on track to happen. Newcastle want him. Fee is being discussed between 40 and 50 million. It probably won't go up to 50. Probably closer to 40 would be a final figure. But how do Atleti really ideally reinvent this defense in front of Oblak to prevent another season like this from happening for him?
Yeah, again, it's Lodi is kind of one of those players who's in between. He's neither a pure fullback and he's not a pure wingback. So in order to play him at left back, you have to have someone that's defensively more solid, and Reinildo obviously came and took his place there. Mm-hmm. And likewise, all things being equal, he's not starting ahead of Yannick Carrasco either, so he's kind of in between being a fullback and a left wing back. Good for depth, but I mean, if Atletico can get anywhere near 40 million for him, you'd be taking that and running, like.
I know a fair few people on social media who would disagree with that. But I understand the rationalization totally. Like, Lodi's been here 3 years. He was a routine starter in his first season, but hasn't really made the cut for Simeone's best 11 the past 2 years. It's a World Cup year. He wants to play. He's not an essential player, and Atleti can make a profit on him. I think on one level, you're loath to lose a 24-year-old Brazil international with as much skill and talent as he has, but it doesn't seem like he's going to put it all together under Simeone. So with that in mind, one option becomes pretty clear: sell him.
Yeah, and that's another point, in that I think he can be very, very good for another manager, but under mm-hmm. Simeone, and in this context, I don't think he's ever going to reach the heights that he like. If you played him at Barcelona, for example, I think he could do a lot better, because like he's got the pace, he's got the delivery, he wants to get forward. And for what you lose defensively, he makes up in it. But at the same time, Simeone's never going to play him as a pure left back for a long period of time in order to and give him the freedom to push forward. It's kind of constantly going to be this kind of fight between Lodi's natural instincts and what Simeone is asking for him. And then you just get a player who ends up being kind of stuck in no man's land. Mm-hmm. Which is what happened to Lodi in that. So a different context, and Lodi could be excellent, but I don't think he's ever going to achieve that under Simeone, given the constraints put on him at left back.
I have this recurring dream / fantasy, Robbie, that Atletico, once they sell Lodi, go and use some of the funds on Jose Gaya, and I get very excited.
Another player who, more solid defensively, but is he going to be given the freedom to go and do what he does best under Simeone? He does actually have the kind of a style of a player that would be more suited to Simeone. Mm-hmm. But I wonder how Simeone would use him and what kind of restraints he would put on him.
Yeah, I think it depends on the formation, definitely. As you mentioned, Reinildo's arrival was immensely important for a couple of reasons. It solidified the team's defense when it needed it most, helped them finish third in the end. But it also gives Simeone more flexibility. He can play a 3-5-2 or a 4-4-2. Reinildo as a third center back was just massive, completely wiped out that portion of the pitch. And that would allow more freedom for a fullback, a wingback to go forward. Can Gaia play wingback? Can anyone at Atleti recruit as a potential Lodi replacement? Are they capable of playing in both systems? Because that's what's probably going to be required.
Exactly. And then do, and then if they don't, for example, if Lodi misses, if Atletico play two or three games on the bounce where they have to play four at the back, and he opts for Hermoso's probably gone, but he opts for a more defensive-minded left-back. Is Lodi able to come straight back into the team and assume his responsibilities when they do switch back to a more attacking, say, a 3-5-2 or whatever it happens to be? And this is where I come back again to the fact that Simeone needs to decide what he's actually doing and build a squad around that and have two players. Because there's not that many players that can play in two positions equally as good. You're getting a trade off if a player is versatile, barring a handful. Like there's only a few that can actually make it work, and Atletico obviously don't have the funds to go and be buying someone like obviously Lucas Hernandez or someone like that, who's absolutely rock solid defensively and is a flyer on the wing too. It's someone like that, and these players are elite, and this is why Bayern Munich are coming after them. So what happens is you end up with and Simeone ends up having to use Reynildo, who's defensively quite good but a little bit of a liability, and Lodi, who's attacking a proper winger, offers you plenty going forward, but then he's not going to contribute as much defensively, and you're left with kind of two, and then there's uncertainty over who's the actual starter and whether or not it depends on what you need. And yeah, so there's only a handful of those players that are able to do that without a massive trade-off, and Atletico. They're gonna need to go and find one. There's a guy called Jonathan Klaus,
yeah,
from Lens, and Atletico have been linked to him. And now I haven't really seen him playing. Not really. I haven't seen him playing, but the guy has is it 14 assists or something?
Yeah, 11 assists in Ligue 1 last year. Five goals, 11 assists.
11 assists last season, I think he's second or third in Ligue 1 for assists.
Yeah, behind some guy called Messi.
Yeah,
that's
yeah,
not bad.
Mbappe's up there too. Like this is, and I'm not playing for a club who are particularly amazing. So and he scored 5 goals as well. So yeah, someone like that maybe. But yeah, it's and he actually fits. He's 30 nearly. He's gonna be 30.
Yeah,
soon,
he's
so.
Got a year left on
kind
his
of
contract.
Player.
He's 29.
Yeah, kind
I,
of player.
I looked at some of his metrics on FB Reference, and like some really wild underlying shot creating and goal creating numbers for him from his position. And he has experience in a 3-5-2 and a 4-4-2. That's the kind of signing that Atleti need to be eyeing, especially with him being in the last year of his contract. Yeah, that's the kind of player that Atleti should be scouting and trying to acquire.
Exactly, yeah, and these are the kind of players who, obviously, it might not work out. He's played for, and you wonder if he's 30 now, and he's only played for Kuveji Rouen in League 2, Armenia in the Bundesliga 2, Armenia, yeah, for 2 seasons, and then Lens in Ligue 1 and for 2 seasons, and they finished 7th in both. What's... putting up those kind of numbers, what's going on here? Has someone just completely missed out on Mr. Klaus, or are we geniuses? No, we can't be, because we're not the ones who mentioned him. But
that's right.
Yeah, like he's the kind of player that you could buy, and then he could end up just completely disappearing. And this is why you need Simeone all in on these guys, and to have a big say in who he wants, and this is actually back to a question about you were talking earlier about the money and stuff like that, and I completely get that, and I've been thinking a lot about Kylian Mbappe and the Real Madrid thing and all that. So they've got, I don't know how many million euro now that they're not going to spend on Mbappe's wages over the 6 years of his contract or whatever.
This is a massive
opportunity for Real Madrid, and I understand that at the very, very top of the game, it's about money. I'm not saying it's not about money, and I'm not saying even below the top tier, it's not about money. It is largely about money.
Mm-hmm.
But I think I think someone in the data analysis community put up a tweet the other day saying about how clubs don't actually really understand the low hanging fruit that they can pick by just having a team of data analysts, data scientists, and it's not that expensive. And I just think Atletico and Spain in general, data analytics has been really slow to come in to this country. Mm. And the top teams don't even have analytics departments. And I understand that we can lean too heavily on them, and this isn't like an evangelist tirade or about data analytics. But I think it can. It's an easy one. So, for example, you have €1 million, okay, per year. Put that into a data analysis department for guys scouting and buy top-class data from StatsBomb, Opta, and wherever else, okay? €1 million. And this is kind of what Sevilla are doing. Now, I don't know how heavily they lean on the data, but you put €1 million in, and then with your €50 million, you buy 5 players in League One, because Monchi has spoken about how League One is like a gold mine for players because it's really competitive. They focus heavily on development and it translates well to La Liga. Okay, League One, you have €50 million and you buy 5 players for 10 million each, or 3 players for 15 million each, whatever. And then you flip them, like we're seeing right now with Sevilla, for €70 million when the players are at their highest value. And then you flip Koundé and Diego Carlos for €100 million.
Yep.
You take your €30 million, you invest that into the club in different areas, or €20 million, and then you take your €80 million and you buy 5, 8, or 6 €15 million players, and you repeat that. And it's an excellent business model, because if you're not going to be competing anyway, why not have a model where you develop players and you become self-sustainable, instead of what Atletico are doing, for example, where they buy 30-year-olds with no sell-on value, and they're just constantly fighting a fire, and that's the feeling you get. And personally, I understand that I do lean towards the data analytics side of things, so I'm going to say this, but I find it more interesting then as well. And I know that Cerezo and the board of directors aren't really too worried about it being interesting. They want to win, and I get that. But I just think that it makes more sense, and I think there's less risk involved. When you're buying, like, you buy Daniel Voss, for example, and I understand that it wasn't a massive amount of money that they bought him for. He's 33. You spent €2.7 million on him in the winter, and I know what you were trying to do. You were fighting a fire that had been created, but
it was a fire they made themselves, though.
Why don't you invest Trippier? Forget about this season. No. See, this is the problem, because we're fighting the fire.
Right.
Forget about this season and put that $2.7 million and build a world class data analytics, data science, data analytics department in your club. Buy the best data, hire a couple of the good guys, 5 or 6 video scouts, whatever, and go from there. And then you develop players, and I know that it's kind of it's almost like a derogative term calling a club like Sevilla a selling club and all this. I think their model, when you're fighting against state-run clubs anyway, why not go about it in this way rather than trying to fight them? Because if you're going to try and fight them for money, like Real Madrid are doing, and this is kind of back to their point, you have absolutely no chance. And Diego Torres from El País spoke on the Second Captain's podcast recently, and he was talking about how Real Madrid are trapped inside the Kylian Mbappe story. This idea that this one guy is going to, it's like a fairy tale. He's going to come in and he's going to do this and that, and it's madness. Instead of buying 5 really, really, really good players with the money that you were going to give him, and I understand that I don't get the marketing side of things and the commercial side of things, but right. Why not do that rather than trying to fight these guys in the way? Why don't you get smart?
Yeah, you need any leg up you can find against the clubs in England, because the TV rights deals are just like night and day. I don't know if you saw that thread on Twitter the other day from the Financial Times reporter who wrote a smaller story about this, but it was a really illuminating Twitter thread on how the Premier League's TV deal is going to generate nearly 4 billion quid next year. La Liga is going to generate about half that. So you need any advantage you can get. In data analysis and analytics and sports science, that's the exact way to do it. And yeah, it's Sevilla's selling club, etc. That's the narrative, the talking point. But it's, as we've seen, it's a pretty sustainable model. It's a team that's won the Europa League 6 times in 15 years. And they've kind of deviated from it the past couple of years by targeting older players with little resale value. And I think Monchi is realizing that that's not quite the right way to do it. Atletico haven't really realized that one way or the other, and that is a problem. Do they want to be a team that snaps up 21, 22, 23-year-olds and develops them? Do they want to be a team that acquires players toward the end of their peaks, so they get the final years of their prime out of them, and then, you know, because flags fly forever, right? Just win as much as you can with players toward the end of their primes. What team do Atleti want to be? This is what we keep asking, and it doesn't seem like they know, given the number of players that they're being linked to this summer. It doesn't seem like they have it clear one way or the other, and that needs to be resolved.
Exactly, and this is actually, that's part of why I've been thinking a lot about this. So you get Boubacar Kamara, for example, and he's got the option between Atletico and Aston Villa, and Aston Villa just wiped the floor with. And this is obviously partly down to wages, but Atletico are a Champions League club. How could they not convince him? And this is back to creating something that people want to be a part of, and. I'm not saying it's not about money, because it is. It is essentially about money at the end of the day. If you offer a guy €1 million, or 3 million euro a year, or 1 million, he's going to pick 3 million. I'm not saying that. I'm talking when it's more equal. Do you want to be a club where a player will go and say, I want... Like, you look at Liverpool now, and I understand that Jurgen Klopp is a phenomenon, and he's got so much charisma that anyone would want to go and play for him. But if you're picked, and I know that Liverpool are at the very top of the game now too, but if Liverpool pick you to come and sign for them, you'd nearly go there and work for free. Like, no, you wouldn't, but like they're so good at what they do, and they've created something that people want to be a part of. And Diego Torres said that he was talking about how there's so much money involved in the game now that players aren't really as much as looking. They're not really looking at it from a financial point of view, and they are, but it's gone a little bit further than that. And you saw Kevin De Bruyne using an analytics company to find what's the best fit, where's the best fit for me, to, as Diego Torres said, create art with my football. And this is what players want to do now. Create something that people want to be a part of, develop young players, and then, okay, you're not going to... And Atletico are caught up in this... If Real Madrid are caught up in the Kylian Mbappe story, Atletico Madrid are caught up in the trophy story, where they'll win at all costs. And it's like, okay, I get that, but how sustainable is this? And I understand that winning a trophy is an incredible thing that the fans will never forget, and that needs to be the end goal. But at the same time, you're looking at it going, is this sustainable? The people, there's so much ego involved in this, and so much money involved in that Atletico are never going to willfully say, okay guys, let's just back off here, we got close enough. And they're not, but it's going to take catastrophe, and there's going to be some kind of a collapse, whether that be when Diego Simeone leaves or during his reign. There has to be a breaking point here, because they can't compete. And why not get smart now before the collapse comes, rather than waiting for the collapse and then saying, well, we gave it a go for as long as we could, and now we're back to square one. And I just think that I think we're getting to that point now with football in many ways, because it's just and I understand that fans, the Champions League is still a massive thing, but it's getting to the point now where fans are actually starting to engage in another way, in that there's mini leagues within leagues. So Real Betis aren't fighting for La Liga, they're fighting for, Europe, and that's their mini league, and they're kind of trying to enjoy football in a different way. And yeah, it's something that I, and this is actually all part of why I'm so critical of Simeone, because they don't develop players, and not just Simeone, the club in general, because a lot of the signings don't really make that much sense in a long-term view. And for what you do maybe get, for example, Daniel Voss, for what you might have gotten for him for 6 months, you're better off just saving your money and promoting someone from within. Because now what you're left with is Daniel Voss, let me see here, Daniel Voss on a contract until
through next year.
Until next year. So you've got another year of him on a contract. And is he really going to move the needle for Atletico Madrid next season?
No, they're probably going to terminate his contract, honestly.
Yeah, like, I mean, and we're talking about smart signings and different things like that. I mean, that's 2.7 million euro, and I know we've become a little bit desensitized to the amounts of money being talked about, but, like, 2.7 million euro is a lot of money.
But, yeah, but for pretty much any club that isn't a giant state-run or sponsored club, that's a fee you don't want to part with for nothing, and that is practically what Atletico did in the Voss deal. And it comes back to what we've been saying about, and what you've been saying quite eloquently, Robbie, is that Atletico don't really know how the team that they want to build. Like, are they going to make more signings like Cunha last year? Are they going to make more signings like João Felix? Or are they going to bring in more players like Griezmann or Voss, or extend Felipe's contract, which is a really uninspiring decision. Really uninspiring decision.
Yeah, and this is, they're probably thinking we need to make hay now while Simeone is still here, because he's not going to be around forever. And I do get that, and I'm not saying stop trying to win. I'm not saying that.
Yeah, but Simeone won't be here forever. You need to build a system that is sustainable.
I just think football, and I've been around journalism enough now, and I've seen enough at different clubs to know that, or to kind of peek behind the curtain a little bit to see that a lot of the decisions being made in these clubs and you think, oh, they're so smart, they've got a plan. They really, a lot of them don't. And I'm not saying that in particular about Atletico, but, like, no. I mean, Barack Obama, in his book, he was talking about when he became the president of the United States, he thought he thought, oh, everyone he talks to now is going to be, like, this expert, like, and it's going to be, they're all going to know everything that they're talking about. And he got in there and he realized,
yeah, that's not true.
They're just guys.
They're just dudes.
You know?
Yeah.
And I just think that I just think that some of the clubs right now, like Brentford, teams like that, are really and I think my issue is more with Spain being so slow to kind of catch on to this. And it just feels like, I don't know about every club in the Liga, but a lot of them don't really even, like Barcelona have the Barca Innovation Hub. A lot of the data scientists there said that there was absolutely nothing, and they were doing some of the top work in the field, and they were like, we're not being listened to in terms of signings or anything. And if it's that bad at Barcelona, then as you go down the scale, I would imagine it's even worse. So that's my rant over. You said I was speaking eloquently, and I'll take that, but I don't believe you either.
Sure you were. Like, you made your points clearly, and you elaborated when required. Well done.
Thanks.
We got the
you made sentences.
They were complete sentences with a predicate, verb, adjective, and all the grammatical standards, Robbie.
Just improvement, Jeremy. That's all, improvement. There were phrases that, there were sentences that made sense, and that's all we could ask for.
Well, the last thing I want to talk to you about today, Robbie, is the column you wrote yesterday for Into the Calderon about the midfield options for Atletico. And this is a problem area for the team, because a lot of the sides Atletico come up against, the elite sides in the Champions League and even within their own domestic league, they have quick players, right? Faster players, both in terms of thought and in terms of actual physical foot speed. Atletico can play too slowly and can get caught out for pace in midfield. So you wrote about some of the really young, dynamic midfielders playing in France that Atletico probably aren't going to sign, but these are the kind of profiles that Letty should be looking at. Talk it through a little bit more with your process and what you think at Letty, what is the kind of midfielder at Letty need to find this summer?
Yeah, it's not an easy thing to do. I mean, it's the kind of thing that, and for one reason or another, I found myself watching a lot of Ligue 1 this season, and I saw a lot of. I find the level there really good, and there's loads of young players. A lot of them out of Atletico's price range, but a lot of young players coming through, and I know there's a risk involved with buying young players and. That haven't at 22 and 23 and stuff, but at the same time I watched them enough to be thinking these guys are definitely worth it if you get them for 10 or 12 or 15 million. Now some of them are already touted as becoming, like we saw Tucci Manny, I think that's how you say it, he being linked to Real Madrid, and there's another couple of guys there that are already touted as being Real Madrid, Bayern Munich, Man City ready. But then you get some of the other guys slightly lower down the league, maybe even a little bit younger, haven't got as much on their resume, but who do plenty. And it's not easy to replace a Thomas Partey or someone like that. And they're probably the exception rather than the rule in terms of buying young players and hoping that they turn out. But if Atletico are pretty set on Jeffrey Condogbia, why not buy one of the players I mentioned in the piece, and it's a machine learning technique called clustering, and you do it and you use a lot of different metrics and you group them all together and you get which are most similar. So I did that and clustered them and found a group that Boubacar Camara was in, and I filtered it for players that were below 23 and who had played a specific amount of games. So and I got back a couple of names that I kind of like the look of, and I had seen Cheick Doucouré playing a couple of times this season, and he was really good. And obviously it would take a lot more work to go and scout them properly and see what exactly Atletico are looking for, but mm-hmm. I just wonder if these guys are available for 10 or 15 million euro, like why wouldn't Atletico go for them, like, you know?
Yeah, why not? And it seems like the club is more interested in players within Spain. Carlos Soler has been kind of tenuously linked, given the chaos that's going on at Valencia right now. Guido Rodriguez from Betis has also been more prominently linked, with both clubs needing to make a sale, needing to balance the books before June 30th. You can expect some movement there pretty soon. Guido Rodriguez is a player that strikes me as a pretty good fit for this team, but I think the point of the article is pretty well taken, Robbie, in that Atletico need to get younger and more dynamic and a bit quicker in terms of speed of thought and physical speed, because the physical capabilities of their midfield last season were, the physical capacity was really concerning. Throughout the season, Atleti were overwhelmed in midfield. The balance was all off, and Atleti really need to reinforce that area of the park this summer and really find more balance and more dynamism if possible, more versatility if possible, to more readily switch between a 3-5-2 and a 4-4-2, which is likely what the club's going to do next year, or what Simeone's going to do next year.
Yeah, and even if... Like, if you're spending $2.5 million on Vass, why not push the boat out and spend $10 million on a young guy who has sell-on value and who can add competition, intensity, and bring him in, and then add a player from the academy too, and really kind of... And I think the issue maybe in terms of competition for Simeone is that, like, we know that he's not going to play the young guys. When it comes down to it, it's false, it's fake competition for places, mm-hmm. because it's not a real competition in terms of, we know who's going to start on the big game in the big games, and if Simeone could inject a little bit of no look, blank slate job here, and you fight for your place and that's it. Obviously the guys with the experience are going to have an advantage, but at the same time, create a proper healthy competition within the squad, and Saúl coming back, and yeah, I think. It's something that Atletico really need to look at, and I think it would help the team, not only for the entire season, but especially when the going gets tough and they need some fresh legs or a fresh player to come in and add something that maybe Condogbia can't or Koke can't, it would give them way more options and a more competitive squad with more plugged-in players, and might help to fix that mentality issue that we spoke about earlier, too.
Mm-hmm. Younger, hungrier players who haven't been, you know, battle-scarred yet, haven't dealt with injuries, haven't dealt with fatigue, just mental and physical fatigue, And really, the competition for places is just immensely important in this squad. And for a lot of last season, the meritocracy kind of disappeared. And the standards dropped this year, Robbie, in a way that is pretty concerning relative to other seasons under Simeone. And that has to be addressed this summer, or else Atletico are going to be right back here next year, and they may not be fortunate enough to finish third in the end. So they have to get this summer right, and the attitude's got to change. The competition has to be, it has to heat up, and they need to really fight for a couple of trophies next year. Like, it's tough. It's tough in La Liga with how Madrid look. It's tough in the Champions League with the English teams and Bayern and PSG. I get all that, but you got to compete much better. You got to compete in a way that generates pride and enthusiasm and ilusión. And we didn't see that really very much this past season.
No, exactly, and that's it. And we can talk about analysis and all that, but at the end of the day, it's just a weekly showing up, and that's something that Atletico need to fix next season.
Do you have any opinion on the the Thibaut Courtois stuff from yesterday, when some enterprising Atleti fans went to the Metropolitano and removed his plaque?
Not really. I think the plaque thing is a bit of a funny idea, and maybe not for Courtois because he did play so many times for. But I think it should be a little bit more than 100 games, and that's a kind of a side point. But I actually didn't see what he said. But what did he say then after?
He I don't know if he said anything directly in response to it, but before the Champions League final, he was asked, you know, you played and lost a final for Atletico, you lost to Real Madrid in 2014, and he responded to that by saying, I feel like I'm on the right side of history now. Which, okay, that's a comment that, you know, it's of course a little provocative, but just, I'm of the inclination to just kind of let that go, like, forget it.
Yeah, I think that's part and parcel of the whole thing, isn't it? Like, I mean, opposition fans are going to get... That's what a rivalry is, and expecting them not to respond is almost like... It was like when they sold Griezmann. It was like for me, it felt like the fans weren't really angry. They were angry in that he had betrayed the club, but it was kind of like they almost understood it, but it was like, we have to be angry here. And it's the same with the Courtois thing. I mean, yes, it's definitely provocative, and I think that Courtois is a little bit like that anyway.
Mm-hmm, definitely.
I think he just says whatever he thinks, and which is great. So, yeah, I think it's a little bit of a storm in a teacup, but I also understand completely Atletico's, the fans' response to it. And I like the fact that... there's a bit of needle there, to be honest with you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it keeps the rivalry hot and humming, you know? I kind of like it.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
I'm not really someone to get really blindingly angry at something like that. Like, he's Real Madrid's goalkeeper. There's an added element to this because he used to play for Atletico. You know, that's how a rivalry should work. I think it's a sign of a healthy rivalry, honestly.
Yeah, exactly, and he'd be booed at the next game and all that. And
now we'll move on. Well, that is about all I've got, Robbie. What do you got, man? Anything else?
No, that's about it. Now it's time to go and make some dinner.
Yes. Well, at least for you. For me, it's my day is just getting started, man. I've already had my cup of coffee. It's a little after 10 a.m. here. So for me, it's breakfast time.
Oh. For me, it's time to have some dinner and start to kind of wind down for the night. Yes, I'm an old man. I go to bed at like... No, I don't. I go to bed at like 10, 11. But,
wow, you are an old man.
The Spanish, the Spanish don't go to bed until like...
Like 2, right?
Yeah. All the TV shows start at like 11:30.
Incredible. What a country.
Yeah, which is just weird for me. Like, I'm already gone at that stage.
Just drool is coming out of your mouth. You're asleep on the couch.
dreaming about Rayo winning the Champions League. come on, let's be a little bit realistic here.
Are you you're pleased that Areola is coming back for next season, I assume?
Yeah, I thought it was a funny one, actually, given the fact that Athletic Bilbao are looking for a manager.
Yep.
I think it's a good place for Areola to continue to grow. It isn't a good place for him to grow. The expectations are kind of low. He gets to play a nice style of football with a club that is used to playing a nice attacking brand. I don't know what the investment's going to be like over the summer, but he's probably not ready for the Athletic Club job yet. And I think that while it did feel like a move that made sense, he's probably thinking he's got loads of time to work with Athletic Club, and that was not the right time exactly.
Mm-hmm. With elections coming up this summer and a little bit of upheaval there, probably, and he's still really young, so it's probably a fair decision, a good choice to stick it out at Ryo and see what happens next year. Never a dull moment at that club, to be sure, as you well know.
Exactly, yeah. So we'll see what happens over the summer. I'm not expecting too many miracles, but let's see where they go after a good season last season, and it did what they achieved their objectives, and we'll see where we go.
Indeed. Well, that just about does it for this edition of Colts Narrow Chat. We will be around this summer. We'll be back probably mostly to talk about the big transfer stories or any big news that takes place. We won't be doing weekly stuff like we tried to do throughout the season. But thank you all for listening throughout this season and for your continued support. You can follow our work on intothecalderon.com, on social media, primarily on Twitter, and also on Patreon at patreon.com/ColtsNeroChat, and on Spotify as part of the Atletico Madrid Podcast Network. Make sure you subscribe and listen to our shows there. We will chat with you all again soon. Thank you again for listening. Adios.